You found a show that will explore how to experience a kingdom lifestyle that is both focused and balanced. Welcome to Live Exceptionally. In a world where we are constantly bombarded with demands on our time and attention, it can be difficult to find the space to truly live our best lives. But what if we could find a way to live exceptionally with a sense of purpose, freedom, and rest? This show is for you. Join us as we discover how to live exceptionally, finding freedom and rest along the way. Now, let's get into this week's episode of Live Exceptionally with Dr. Yvonne Thompson.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Yvonne, your host, founder of Elisi, and author of Can You Sleep Like This in the Rest of God? Did you know that what we think about money and finances impact how well we do financially? Sharing with us today is Callie Picardo, author of Money Talks and Healthy Money. She is also the Vice President for Development at United Theological Seminary in Ohio and also on the preaching team at Mosaic Church. I'm excited to have her to kick off our series on financial literacy. I'm excited that you are our first guest based on the books that you have had come out, your first book, Money Talks, and now the second book, released this month on healthy money. And when we talk about financial literacy, I think it's so important for us to focus on how we approach money in terms of our mindset and our thought process. What are the five money mindsets that you lay out in your book?
Yeah, in our new book, Healthy Money, we've come up with five different financial mindsets that we found most people resonate with one or two of these. And some people have said in different stages of their life, they've resonated with different ones. But the first one's a security mindset. And keep in mind, these are can be good or bad. One's better than the other. It's just different ways we're wired. And each of them have a positive side and a more challenging side. So the security mindset is the one that's really good at saving. They are great at having financial goals and working toward that, but they can also tend toward a more scarcity mindset where they get nervous about not having enough finances, and it can be hard to trust in God with your finances. And so giving can be hard. A big purchase can become stressful. So that's the security mindset. Then there's a collector mindset. This is the person that loves like having a collection. They just enjoy gathering things. It might be something big like antique cars, antique furniture. It might be as small as a little collection of different sized angels or crosses or, you know, different things, but they love to show those off. And those can be a way to share the gospel with people. You can get connected with different people that have a similar passion. And so it can open the doors there. But the challenge with the collector mindset can be finding your worth in those things. And so that's the temptation to guard against with the collector mindset. And then there's a carpe diem mindset, which carpe diem means seize the day. These are the fun people to be around. You know, they're always doing something new and fun and different. And they love experiences. They're like, why wait to enjoy life? Let's enjoy life today. The challenge can be working towards some long-term goals, which take that steady plodding. And so they can have trouble with, you know, saving and working for retirement and paying off debt and some things like that. There's a benevolence mindset, which in our Christian faith, often we think, well, giving's good. Why wouldn't you want giving? You know, and this person, the good side is they are often very generous, whether that's to the church or nonprofit ministries or to other individuals. This is the person that might here in April already have Christmas gifts bought for December because they just can't resist it. They see the perfect gift for someone. But the challenge can be making sure that you also can receive blessings. You know, sometimes it can be a point where it's like, oh, no, I can't have anything nice because that would be bad. I don't deserve that. Or it can become codependent in that benevolence mindset. So that's the part to guard against. And then the final one is a laissez-faire mindset. That's the one that's just like, yeah, I'll go with the flow, you know, and that can be good when it's like the Apostle Paul who says, I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances, whether well-fed or with want. You know, I've learned plenty or want. I'm okay with either. I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. But the challenge can be if it's more of a self-defeatist type where it's just, oh my goodness, I'm never going to get out of this debt. Why even bother? Like, my finances are such a mess. I'm just going to ignore them. I'm not even going to look at them. You know, so there's the positives and negatives to each of these mindsets. And like I said, some fall more with one or another. Some are a couple different. I've talked to some people that they're one way with their personal finances and a different way at work.
That's so good. I think when I look at financial literacy or just financial planning, we all have an approach of how we approach our finances, but the fact that I have identified specific mindsets or buckets or categories of our approaches to finance. And I think that when you have an understanding, when a person has an understanding of where they fall in one of those mindsets or approaches to their finances, it can definitely impact how they progress in having a financial plan. So how would you say these mindsets impacts or affects a person's financial situation?
So each have different strengths. And if you can harness the strengths of your financial mindset, then it helps you work towards those goals. And so if you know your laissez-faire mindset, you're kind of hands off, you probably need someone in your life to help you with those, whether it's a significant other, whether it's a financial advisor. You need someone to help you, hold you accountable toward those goals. And you can know that about yourself. And you can know that contentment's the positive, but have someone to help you with those. If you know you've got the benevolence mindset, you can enjoy that gift of giving, but you can also budget for that giving. So, you know, if you love to be able to give spontaneously, budget in some money for spontaneous giving so that you can make sure you're also working towards some of those long-term savings goals. So you'll one day be able to continue to be generous because you've planned for the future. So if you know how you're wired, you can more strategically work with your wiring with the Lord and say, okay, God, you know how you've made me. Help me to be a faithful steward the way you've made me.
One of the things that I don't even know if you are aware of, that my focus for my podcast, my books, my ministry, everything focuses around whole wellness. Mm-hmm. And with whole wellness, looking at the soul, so our mind, our emotions, our will, and how these things align with stewardship, the stewardship of our body, stewardship of our finances, and even focusing on healing of like past hurts, past pains. And I find that a lot of the times when people are impacted, whether it's their mental health or their mental wellness, it ties back to some type of pain or some type of trauma that they've experienced. And so when I think about finances, a lot of times how we approach finances as adults relates to not necessarily trauma, but patterns, habits that we have developed through our life starting as a child. Like, what was the approach that our parents took with us as children, like whether we received an allowance or maybe we were just given money all the time without working for it. And so whichever approach we grew up in, that can impact how we approach finances as adults. But I also feel that sometimes trauma, when you look from a financial perspective, like people who have lost jobs, people who have laid off, one thing that's impacting a lot of people now, particularly coming out of the pandemic, medical expenses. A lot of people filed bankruptcy as a result of hospital visits or medical health challenges. How would you say that people who have had financial trauma, which regardless of the source of it, can move past their experiences?
Ivana, that's a really good question. And that's part of it. I mean, we name that this is a 30-day journey toward not just the financial health, but also spiritual and emotional health. Because you're right, it is all tied together. So our hope is that people will pick up this book because of the finances, but then they'll go deeper with God. And so God will just bring healing in so many other areas. But one of the weeks is focusing on the childhood money experiences, how money was handled as a kid. Because you're right, that shapes you. If you saw your parents avoiding debt collectors, if you went through bankruptcy, poverty, living with scarcity, that can impact you. Either you become very frugal yourself. You know, we see this with a generation as we look at those who went through the Great Depression. you know, they became very much savers as a characteristic of that generation. But it can also revert the other way, where you never had money. So now that you've got money, you are going to spend it because you can now afford it. And so you are going to enjoy it. You're going to give your kids and grandkids the life you didn't have. And so sometimes it can lead to the other extreme of going overboard. Mm-hmm. And then we've got another chapter or hold another week focused on those adult money experiences, because you're right, those shape us. And I think the first step truly is naming. When we can name and bring awareness to, hey, that happened and it's impacting me today. Then when we notice it impacting us, we can take it to God. We can take it to the healer. We can take it to the great physician. We can take it to the one who's holding us through that. And we can start to realize that, that yes, that did impact us, but that doesn't define who we are. We are God's beloved children. That is our identity. And when we start to take those things, naming the trauma, we're naming what we've gone through. And honestly, some of this can need a therapist if it's really deep trauma, like a counselor. I'm a big believer in walking with someone who's licensed in this, who has all the tools. But it also takes working with God in this, where God can do kind of that deeper healing work and start to reclaim your identity. So where a lie has gotten in, replacing that with truths from God's word. You're not a failure. You are not a screw up. You are not even a victim. Like, God has given you strength and is refining you through that and is going to grow you, and doesn't want to, he loves you so much where you are, but loves you enough not to leave you there and wants you to grow in God's grace and love. And so I think by naming it and taking it to God, then there's just this beauty of deeper work that can be done. But it is a journey. And that's why we've called this a journey, because it's 30 days on that journey. But and there's further to go. But in 30 days, the hope is that you're closer to God in that.
I think the word journey is most applicable, because a lot of times when we approach our finances, we want quick fixes. But most often, if we've been struggling in our finances, whether it's financial as far as debt or are making ends meet from a budget perspective, that in order to get on track or get on a financial plan, it's a journey. I used to be a financial advisor with companies such like Merrill Lynch, American Express, and as a CPA, that discipline, the discipline of having a plan. But even if you have a plan, when I was a financial planner in, way back in a prior career, as a financial planner, it's like you can map out a plan for a client, but if their mindset wasn't in the right place, and particularly if they were married and as a marital unit, if they were not on the same page in terms of how they were going to approach their finances, you can make a plan for them to follow. But if they didn't change their mindset, it didn't make sense, because the plan would never be followed. How would you say discipline, or practicing these spiritual disciplines, we say naming, identifying these areas, taking it to God, how does that actually replace these type of financial strongholds of like lack of, well, going back to the mindsets and those problem areas that people struggle with? How can we replace these strongholds with these spiritual disciplines?
I'm a big fan that you need to replace something. So if you're trying to get rid of something and you just get rid of it, then there's this big hole. And are you just going to say, I'm not thinking about it, I'm not doing it? No, it's going to come back because you're not filling it with anything else. And so if it's a lie you're pulling out, find scripture to replace it. So wherever that lie tries to creep back in, you replace it with scripture. If it's a habit that's gotten in, that's become defeating your financial goals, what is that spiritual discipline you're going to do? Like, say you struggle with finding your worth and security in your finances, and you know you struggle with hoarding. Make generosity, that spiritual discipline of giving, a practice. You know, if you've noticed that you have a tendency to shop when you are feeling bad, all of a sudden it's late at night and you found that you've just bought 20 new things on Amazon because it's so easy, or the ads were just coming through and you were like, oh, I apparently need that new outfit. You know, if you're noticing that you're tending to struggle with shopping, What are those times where you're weakest? What is that practice you're going to do instead? Are you instead going to spend some time in scripture? Are you going to instead do some journaling? Are you going to spend some time in prayer? Fasting can be a powerful one, and not always just fasting from food, but a spiritual discipline of taking a season where you fast from spending. That can be a practice as well. But if you take a moment where you're going to say, whenever this comes up, here's my plan. You know I tend to do this. I'm going to name it, but I'm going to have a plan so that when that temptation comes, I know what I'm going to do instead. Then there's a better rhythm and you can start to build new habits, healthy habits, like the spiritual disciplines, to be able to replace the unhealthy habits.
That's good. One of the things that I know related to both of your books, the concept of God is enough. Yes. And I like that terminology. I mean, it can be used in a number of different ways, but in our finances, you know, just that analogy you used about at night, or if there's an issue that you have or something you're struggling with and you shop as a way to self-medicate, sometimes people are give, they'll give until it hurts, so to speak, because it's a way of self-medicating. But when we say God is enough, that's coming from like a foundational principle of how we approach life, how we approach stewardship, how we approach our finances. Because when we look at our finances, it goes back to that we're being good stewards over the things that God has given us. Is it good stewardship to spend our money on 20 things on Amazon late at night when we know that we have our mortgage or our rent due next week? But because in the moment, it feels good, in the moment, it helps us to feel better. But if our principle is based on God is enough, I think that's a contributing factor that can help us replace some of these strongholds, because our confidence is in God, one, but then two, it's our philosophy about how we approach our finances and just life in general. Can you share a bit more about how this principle can be applied on the road to just sound financial planning?
It's a mantra. I mean, it's a mantra that you can just start to say to yourself again, and God is enough. God is enough. Because if I'm honest, I struggle with that sometimes where I just get to this point where I'm like, I just can't. I can't. Like, and my deep fear is that I am not enough. I can't. I can't on my own. Like, I'm not strong enough. I don't have enough willpower. I don't have enough discipline. But if I'm remembering God is enough, and 2 Corinthians 9:12 is what I come back to a lot. God's grace is sufficient for me. His power is made perfect in weakness. When I feel weak, okay, good, that I am weak. Like, I can't do this on my own, but God is enough. God is able to give me strength when I feel weak. I've spent a lot of time around the recovery community. It's a big part of our church here in the Dayton area. And a big mantra that they have is, I can't, God can, I think I'll let him. You know, it's that idea that we aren't enough, but God is enough. And if we start to have that attitude with our finances, where when we feel like we're at the end of our rope, sometimes providing in ways unseen. And oh my gosh, Yvonne, sometimes we start to see miracles because we're trusting in the one who can do miracles and taking those needs and concerns and those areas where we feel weak to the one who is strong and depending on God to be enough when we aren't.
It's definitely a mantra. Mm-hmm. And it's also a philosophy from the perspective of that the society and culture that we live in is, we are inundated with consumerism, commercialism. When we look on social media, there's almost this image that's continuously portrayed of people who have a lot. You know, people tend to share their successes, share their blessings, share all the positive things that are taking place in their life. So it becomes this shiny, glitzy type of image that you're always seeing. You see less often the people sharing struggles, people who are struggling financially or going through issues. And so there's this barometer that sometimes we can compare ourselves to of all the shiny, glitzy things that we're seeing on social media. And then we in our flash begin to, I don't want to say pursue, but that comparison, competition, ambition that settles in where that's what we're trying to obtain, or that we think that is quote unquote good of what we should have. But when we look at God is enough, even in prioritizing God in our life, that we're not all going to be at the same level when it comes to whether it's influence or materialism or our possessions, but it doesn't make us less. It doesn't make us less in terms of our identity in Christ, God's love for us, our relationship with God. And I think it's so important for us to understand that He is enough and God is enough. It doesn't mean that I have to be the same in my material value or the dollar amount that's in my checkbook or my investments or estate planning or any of these things. It doesn't devalue who I am.
Yeah, it's so true. And social media can make it so hard because that's a filtered life. Like that is not, and there can, if that is causing you discontentment, a fast from social media can be really helpful to reorient. I mean, they've shown that it is bad for our mental health to spend too much time. It leads to depression, anxiety, those feelings of worthlessness, and it's not good for us. Now, I say this as someone who is on social media, but I've got to limit the amount of time I spend on there because if I'm not careful, I do start comparing myself to others. And that's not healthy. And so when we go back to say, okay, God, who do you say I am? Lord, who am I in you? And one of my favorite parables that Jesus tells is about the parable of the 10 talents, where, you know, one person's given 5 talents, one's given 2, one's given 1. And we know the person who gave one had one, you know, he buried it, he didn't do anything with it. And that is essentially that illustration that we don't want to waste what we have. But I love the person that got 5 and the person that got 2, they both doubled what they had. And the manager didn't come back to the person who said 2 and say, what do you mean you only made 2 more? You know, why didn't you make 5 more? The one with 5 made 5 more. No, he said, look at what you've done with what I gave you. Well done, good and faithful servant. Come and enter into the joy of your master. And so they both got this affirmation because they've been faithful with what they had. And so to come back, and gratitude is a great practice for this. Just instead of looking at what I don't have, start saying, God, thank you for all these things that I do have. Oh my goodness, how am I so blessed, Lord? Thank you for all of this. You know, stopping, giving thanks, but also then saying, God, it's all yours. How do you want me to steward these resources for your glory? And then walking in step with God with what we do have, not worrying about what others have. They're on their own journey. They've got their own struggles. They're dealing with their own issues. But just saying, okay, God, nope, here's what I've got. I'm so thankful. And I want to honor you with all I have. That different perspective, that different focus away from what others are doing onto God, that gets our heart back in line. And this is all really about the heart of it. Like you can have a lot of money or a little, but if your heart is right with God and you're walking with God and stewarding what you have, the amount of money you have doesn't matter. It's the heart and the faithfulness and the walking with God is what really matters.
How does a person get started to sound financial management based on having a right heart?
I think it truly is. It's going to God and saying, God, where do I start? What do I have? And there are so many good resources with the how to. Our first book, Money Talks, gets really into more of the how to do this. You want to have a budget that's balanced. And in that budget, you want to put the big things in first. You want to put in giving first. You want to put in savings first. And, you know, I'm a big fan of using a percentage, of picking a percentage. You know, the Bible talks about 10%. If you can't start there, start somewhere. If it's 4% today, start there. And then next year, see if you can add 1% each year. And before you know it, you'll be beyond 10%. But building in giving first, savings first, and then putting in the big things that what is actually a need. You know, we just say, oh my goodness, I just need those new shoes. You know, it's, no, we don't. That is not a need. You probably have 20 billion pairs of shoes in your closet. You know, sometimes you do, like you have a practical need, but, you know, stopping and saying, okay, what is this really a need or is this a want? Building in the needs first and then making those wants reasonable, you know, build in a little bit for wants, but in a way that's very manageable, building in paying off debt, you know, building in those big things. The first step that we typically tell people, and a lot of folks do too, is to have an emergency fund, you know, start putting aside some money that's saving. So then when something does come up, you've got money set aside for it, you know, and you're not having to put it on the credit card. And then start paying off that debt, you know, start knocking off some of those lower balance credit cards to then be able to knock that off and put it toward the next one. You know, they're basic financial steps, and then start saving toward long-term goals for the future. But it, if you're doing it without the heart, it can become about the steps. It can become about the finances, when really we want God leading us in all of those. And so it really, it starts with the heart. It starts with saying, God, it's yours. Help me to steward this wisely. I want to give back to you, but also spend what you've given me wisely for your glory, not for my own.
Needs versus wants is a key thing. And that's something when I do coaching, counseling, I would always say there's a difference between need, want, and desire. You might need a car, and needing a car, you know, it might be a Chevrolet. You might want a Lexus, but the need is a car. So a Chevrolet can do the job. Yes. Your desire, you know, could be a Bentley, but understanding definitely the difference of what a need is versus a want. I think that is crucial. Share about how people can get a hold of your books, and what would you like to say also as your closing thoughts?
Yeah, both of the books are available on Amazon. That's a great, easy way to get them. Healthy Money is designed where you could do it on your own or with your family or with a small group or a church. And so if you want to buy them in bulk, Invite Resources, our publisher, has discounts on bulk orders. But otherwise, you can get both Healthy Money and Money Talks on Amazon. But my prayer for you is that today you would just take that one step forward toward God with your finances. You might say, gosh, I'm nowhere near where I need to be. That's okay. Draw a line in the sand. Start today. Take it to God. Thank God for all that you do have. And then say, God, what's my next step? It might be buying the book and starting on this 30-day journey with Healthy Money, or it might be starting to automate some giving and saving to get those working in your life. Whatever it is, start today.
Awesome. God is enough, definitely. Yes. And He's enough. Money Talks, Healthy Money. Find that on Amazon. And so important for us to focus on what is our heart posture, what is our mindset as it relates to money. And that definitely will start the path to having a sound financial plan. Thanks so much, Callie. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Yvonne. God bless.